runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 28 with guests Tony Howlett and Greg Kramer, recorded Wednesday, October 10th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. How are you today, Richard?
I am very well, and we're coming into the fall here, or we're deep into the fall now, so it's conference time.
Sure is. When the rain starts, the conferences also
start in earnest. And we go to the sunnier places like Las Vegas.
Yeah.
First week of November, we're going to be in Las Vegas at Dev Connections in the Mandalay Bay. And we're going to get a couple of interviews done, actually, if not more. They've got all sorts of Exchange guys. Windows 2008 server folks are going to be there. So I'm looking forward to doing that.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And then the next week,
it's off to Barcelona.
That's right.
How good is our life?
Well, you know, not too bad.
Yeah, I can't complain.
November.
So the folks at TechEd Europe are bringing us out to Barcelona for the IT Forum Week of TechEd Europe. And we're going to be hosting the Speaker Idol Contest, doing the 64-bit question and a bunch of other things, including some panel discussions and so on. So if you're going to be in Europe, come and see us at IT Forum. We'll have a great time. And then I guess we'll see what shows come out of that. It's going to be interesting to see what we get. I know TechEd US, I was blown away by the great conversations we had.
Oh, yeah. There was just a huge number of terrific people there. I'm also looking forward to the trip to Barcelona and a chance to meet some new people. And I'm finding out also see some people that I just haven't seen in a while, but that I already know they're going to be there. It's going to be – looks like a really, really big event.
You bet. And if you'd like to see something special on Run As Radio, send us an email, info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Tony Howlett is the CTO of Network Security Services, a network consulting firm. He is a CISSP and a GSNA. And Glenn Kramer is the president of Network Security Services. He's a 30-year veteran of the technology industry and has served in a number of management capacities throughout his career. Welcome, guys.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Glad you guys are here.
So this whole conversation started off with the blog post, InfoSec, the Red-Headed Stepchild.
Yeah, it really, one night I was feeling particularly surly and grumpy, I think, about InfoSec, that's Information Security's position in the IT field. And just, you know, we often are relegated to a InfoSec is a zero-sum game. In other words, if we do our job right, nothing happens, right?
Right. Nobody can tell.
If we keep everything secure, we don't want anything to happen. So it's hard to justify, especially in unregulated industries, spending the money for nothing to happen, even though, you know, bad stuff could happen if you don't spend it. It just doesn't show up as a profit item on the balance sheet or on the income statement, so... you really do end up being the redheaded stepchild unless you're in a regulated industry like banking or healthcare, things like that, where there's a little bit of a bite to the law and they have to do it. And even then they're drag kicking and screaming.
This still doesn't sound like people willingly doing it. It's just that it's regulated, so they must do it.
Exactly.
Well, also they're, like in banking, they're also examined. So in healthcare, they're regulated, but not really examined very often. Where in the banks, they're examined, and they absolutely have to do it. So, you know, that's sort of why we concentrated on banking.
Yeah, healthcare has this great regulation called HIPAA, H-I-P-A-A, which is supposed to secure our records, financial records, and all this. What it's primarily done is make it difficult when you call in to get your results. You now have to go in physically or get a letter. So it's made it harder for the customer, but really all the big companies that were trading our information are still doing so. Hackers are still breaking into these things. There was no bite to that law that said they're going to be examined or on this day there'd be fines. There were some criminal penalties for, you know, malfeasance in the executive ranks, but not a whole lot of bite to that law. So again, we're seeing compliance, but not at the level in like banking and other industries, you know, that have to do it.
What are some examples of industries, maybe examples of industries where where you're not seeing the what you're calling compliance? Which industries are lacking? I guess that's the real question.
Basically, you've got banking, which does, and then sort of everybody else who really doesn't.
Yeah, government's starting to get on the bandwagon. Yep. In other words, they recently took off the Department of the Interior off the internet because they were so insecure. They just said, "You guys can't have internet," and they fixed their problems. But it's hit or miss, really. They haven't done things like start to cut funding to companies that don't get regulated. So government's starting to get there. Banking is there and been there for quite a while. Healthcare is sort of on the fence. Again, they have the law, and a lot of bigger providers are complying, but it's not being pushed all the way down because there's no real bite. Legal profession is pretty much unregulated, even though they have a lot of confidential information. So we'd like to see, a lot more concrete participation on the government side and uniform, because again, it is really hit or miss, and some areas like the military do a good job, other areas don't. So yeah, it's still not quite there.
What about private standards? Private standards like let's take PCI for example. I know that's hitting on payment card industry is what PCI stands for everybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The PCI DSS standard is something that applies to e-commerce in general, and of course it applies in part to banking. But that's not a government regulation, that's a private standard and some self-regulation built in. What do you think about that approach?
Well, that's a great example actually, because that's been around for several years, and there was sort of this lackadaisical compliance. Big guys did it. Very, very few of the individual vendors, and most people don't know, as a individual credit card merchant, you have to comply, and very few merchants, I think, could tell you what those are, that they're doing anything to comply. However, they recently instituted a financial penalty. The Visa network is fining, I think, up to $25,000 for not being in compliance and being able to prove it. So now, wow, you're seeing people have to get their tests, and so it's amazing what a little bit of motivation can do, especially financial motivation. And like you said, that's not regulation at all. It's or not legislation. It's internal regulation, and it's starting to work quite well because they put some teeth in it. And yeah,
I think the point here, though, is that if, in our experience, if there's not a financial or a business penalty to be paid, there's not a lot of thought given to the issue of security.
There's no mechanism for making sure people are in compliance and then penalizing them if they're not. Great, it's a law. There might be a few examples made. I can't cite you an example of a healthcare organization being fined for HIPAA. There's not any examples that I know of. So until they start putting some teeth in that and having some examinations, I think you're going to see hit or miss and basically the letter of the law type compliance.
Well, and even if there wasn't teeth per se, if at least there was a charge around failure, so that when there is a breach of data, there's consequences beyond just the breach.
Correct. And to date, HIPAA only allows for criminal penalties in the event of intentional malfeasance or fraud, which is covered by other laws anyways.
Well, that's always going to hold the healthcare agency innocent, because there's no intent there. Incompetence is not intent.
I mean, the biggest impact of HIPAA to date, I think, has been that you notice those little sign-in sheets now have stickers on them.
Yeah.
And again, you can't get your results when you want them. So the impact has been against the consumer, not for the consumer. I still don't see a lot of thought given to protecting written records in doctor's offices or putting in firewalls. It's more or less, why should I spend money on that?
It's a standard bureaucratic response in that basically they've managed to inconvenience the person they were supposed to protect, which is the patient. So they must be doing a good job.
Just like the airline security.
Yeah.
We recently blogged at length on that.
Yeah.
That it's again, a lot of the laws and regulation and extra money being spent is affecting the 99.999% of us who don't want to do anything bad. And the 0.01% who might have ill intentions are probably not much affected by all this.
Right. But again, it must be working because, look at the incredible inconvenience. like I was saying in my blog, you know, you take, when you're going through airport security, you take your belt off, take your shoes off, and, you know, where were these lines when I was in high school and dating? I mean, come on. But, you know, in reality, you know, the HIPAA responses are sort of the same thing. Now, the banking industry is pretty hardcore when the FDIC or the FFIC come in and examine a bank, a state of Texas. They're pretty serious about security. And, you know, I mean, there's a range of competence when they come in. But actually, the banks are pretty much forced to toe the line and be pretty contemporary, protecting customer data.
You know, one of the things that that comes to mind when a few minutes ago you mentioned that, you know, the bureaucrats and the bureaucracy that's gone into the healthcare system, for example. Yet if we talk about government regulation and needing more of that and wishing the government to be more involved, isn't that sort of a contradiction of terms there? Aren't we sort of asking for something that we're already saying we don't like?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as a corollary to that question or follow up is, what do we really need to be doing? I think, I think that a lot of security people would agree that the security InfoSec teams are redheaded stepchildren. I think there's also a lot of IT departments that'll say the same things about themselves. So where do we need to go?
It's a great question. It's, where do we need to go? Everybody needs to become more aware of security. You know, kumbaya.
I don't think we're saying regulation is the best thing. I mean, in fact, what I said recently is what we've learned is over the last couple of years is you can't really regulate good security. You know, the CAN-SPAM Act, what has that done? It has done absolutely nothing to stop spam. It's gotten worse and worse and worse because they're not going after they basically pushed all the spammers offshore where they could really go crazy. I don't know that regulation is the way to get at it. It might be in some industries, but regulation without teeth is may as well not pass it. And so far, they've really not done a good job of passing regulation that has any kind of mechanism for follow-up and compliance. Again, the banking industry has been doing it for literally hundreds of years. I mean, they're so used to tracking things and security in their mindset. It's not something you have to teach them. Other industries, you have to teach them how important it is and how to do it because they haven't historically been had to do it. You know, healthcare.
You look at the business model of these companies. The answer is as soon as it becomes more economical to provide security than not, they will.
Yeah.
And until the black line crosses the red line. It's basically like Tony said, you know, the best thing you can say about it now is we're kind of like baseball umpires that, in essence, if we do our job perfectly, nobody will notice us.
Right, which is more
of an example of how you could do this with the healthcare industry. That, like Glenn said, in the capitalist society, it always works best. If there's a monetary incentive, I guarantee you it's going to happen. With healthcare, if they suddenly said, you're not going to be able to accept Medicare until you have a security audit and you have security scans, wow, how fast do you think all these companies would do it? These doctors, I mean, they would have them yesterday because that's their lifeline. And the minute you make it impact their wallet or it's going to maybe impact their wallet, things will get done. You create laws and it's going to create a system of bureaucrats and there's, you know, always going to be ways around things. So I think, they have to look at how do they motivate these people to do things, and it's almost always going to be the almighty dollar.
Well, doesn't this tie back to your vision or your point about PCI compliance being required by Visa for merchants?
Yeah.
So that's the working scenario there, and that's not government regulation at all.
Right.
Exactly. And it's a great example because, and again, initially they came out with it, and it was, okay, so what? But recently when they started instituting fines, you've seen massive compliance across the board, and I think it's going to be good for everybody. And companies will get things done the most efficient way they can. Believe me, they're not going to waste money, but they'll get the job done. So leaving it to the market mechanisms to get it done, I think, is always the best way. If you can find a way to motivate companies and organizations that way.
Why don't talk a little bit about what it takes to be PCI compliant? Because that, to me, seems like the most logical thing that most people are concerned about, credit card data.
Yeah, it's actually, I wrote an article on this recently, and there's a document out there that tells you what you have to do depending on what you're doing. And the higher up in the food chain they are, like the processors and so forth, have a lot of requirements. But even the merchant, even if you're online, you know, your grandma is selling something on the internet and she accepts credit cards, believe it or not, in her contract, it states that she will comply and is liable for fines if she doesn't. So basically they have to have a security scan done by a certified vendor. They have to do a number of things procedurally, and it's basically standard good practices, which a lot of folks are doing, but they have to verify and show that they're doing them. So it's not really rocket science, but it's more or less showing that you are doing it and documenting it.
I think it's worth pointing out, too, that the PCI standard isn't just Visa, but it's all four big players in the payment card industry.
Yeah, I said Visa, and it is all the major players participating, and it's really, they've got a stranglehold, and they're, basically they can make these vendors do what they need to do, and they're doing the right thing. It's a great success story, you know, and again, without a single bit of legislation being written.
So from a merchant point of view, what's the fundamentals? I mean, if you are grandma taking credit cards, you need to be PCI compliant. What are you needing to do?
Well, you have to, you know, do things like have a firewall, keep your logs, these type of things.
Do the patches you're supposed to be doing on your operating system.
Right. It's all standard best practices, but as we've seen in the last few years, many, many even big companies aren't practicing them. So it's more or less reinforcing what they should be doing and having an audit to prove it. And that's where, again, we come back to audits. You know, great, we say we're doing it, but let's have a third party come in and verify that. And
that's
the teeth. I mean,
exactly.
You know,
it's the third party audit.
I think one of the dangers of asking the question, what do you have to do to be compliant, is that it's not quite that simple. The PCI DSS, or the data security standard, is a document that's available for people to refer to.
Right.
And the point about a third party to come in and do a check is a really good one. I think we've seen a real move, guys, maybe you can comment on this, across the industry in terms of leveraging unbiased third parties to come in and to substantially evaluate the security posture of an organization, so that that
Absolutely.
Organization can then take that and really show other people that there's some real meat on the bone. Maybe you can give some other examples of that.
Tony, remember our client in the east, back east, who called us in, completely unrelated to banking. But one of their clients required that they have a third-party security audit?
Yeah, I mean, this is being driven not by only the regulation, but also by customers who want to know. Because, again, the minute you connect to a network as a trading partner, you're sharing bodily fluids, as it were. If they get infected, it's likely you might get infected. And you need to be aware, and that's, in fact, one of the parts of the PCI DSS standard, is that you know all your trading vendors and anyone you connect to is also compliant. Getting back to the audit, I mean, one of the things we do, a lot of our audits are small banks, very small, maybe 20, 30 employees. And when we go in, we try to take a practical approach. We don't just, go through a checklist and give them a grade and fail them or pass them, but we try to say, well, here's the things you're lacking in, and let's make a business decision on this. This is going to cost X amount, and it's real important, so you definitely should do it. This is going to cost a lot of money, and it's kind of sort of important. So if you give people, again, going back to that monetary, what's the business case for this? And here's how much money it's going to cost. It's much easier for them to grasp than just, hey, do all these things or else. And we've really had a lot of success with small banks, small budgets, but they hit the low-hanging fruit and get a lot of things done, have a high impact, without spending a ton of money. Don't get me wrong, there's money to be spent there, but we try to make the most of their dollar instead of just doing a straight audit and here you are and you guys figure it out. Because I think a lot of people, when they get these audits, get a little bit bewildered, like, oh my God, it's going to take forever and a lot of money to get there. No, it's a continuum. You know, you spend a little money this year, spend a little money next year, and you get there.
Yeah, we'll try to help them with the remediation plan, because remember, the way it works now, all the banks are pretty much held to the same security standard no matter their size. And of course, in a big bank, a big regional bank or a national bank, like Chase or something, they have a huge IT staff and they can do remediation and they can sort of stay on top of this. But some of our customers, you know, the IT person is the, also the cashier
Right.
And they don't have a lot of IT-based knowledge, or they use a third-party IT person in a local town. Yeah. And if they bring in a standard auditor, they get an audit. And the guy does a good job, but basically it's sort of two-dimensional in that it doesn't really give them any sense of, you know, what the next steps are to actually provide the security. Again, it's a bureaucratic response.
But you, like you say, it is a continuum. You can be more compliant and less compliant?
Well, compliance-wise, I mean, there's certain things you have to do, and there's certain regulations you have to hit. But then there's other things. You know, we try to help them with two things, the compliance and the actual security. And believe it or not, that's often those things aren't the same.
Yeah, we get around by calling it the compliance and the appearance of compliance.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times the compliance may be documentation. It doesn't really make them any more secure. They have to do it. And then we also talk about firewalls and technical things that help with that and also make them more secure. So let's, again, getting back to that dollar impact, hey, not only are we making you more compliant, but we're actually protecting your customers and protecting your business.
Ultimately, protecting from a breach is not necessarily compliance.
Yeah, oddly enough, that's sometimes a correct statement.
Wow.
Well, and understand, compliance, the laws don't state that you can't have a breach. They state that you must do everything you can and follow best practices.
Right.
Obviously, breaches happen. And it's like breaking into your house. If someone really wants to break into your house, they can probably do it. They can drive a car through your door.
Right.
The harder you make it, the less likely. So compliance is all about following best practices and doing everything you can do to avoid that. And if it happens,
well, nines to the right of the decimal point.
Yeah. Buying five nines and right. You know that last nine is going to cost you $1 million, and it's not a good business choice. So we try to help them, again, get there. You know, you don't have to be 100% secure. You never will be. But let's go from 95 to 99 to this year, and then, and give them a roadmap to get there.
Probably also worth pointing out that quite often the breach of your house happens because of the maid or the house cleaner that you hired and let into your house and gave the key to.
Right.
Exactly. It's not the guy driving it's not the most obvious thing. It's something quite simple and normal.
And Tony's always stressed this with clients, and fortunately we work with, at some of our banks, we work with some pretty good IT people where, you look at the logs, you use an intrusion detection system. You look for employee anomalies. Now, you know, in a small bank, since the last employee was hired 20 years ago, it's not that big a deal, but Greg, that's an excellent point because that's often a problem. In fact, a lot of times it can happen inadvertently. Yeah. Somebody opens an email. Somebody opens an attachment.
The big banks are not immune to this, even with their huge staffs and as much money as they spend. I mean, I mentioned this in my blog about the Wells Fargo outage of a month or so ago. I don't know if y'all heard about that, but, you know, one of the top five banks in the country went down for like a day and a half. A large portion of their systems were down, and I was aghast. I mean, I couldn't understand how this could happen to a bank this size. And the fact that it was very underreported. And the fact that, a large portion of the country was denied access to their money. And nowadays, cash is becoming such a small portion of our transactions that you literally, the money supply can be affected. It amazed me. And it was actually quite underreported by the media.
You get a sense that they got away with it, that somehow they had this major
failure.
Yeah,
they really did. I was trying to raise the alarm, not necessarily to go after them, but just, guys, we need to look at how important online banking and, you know, digital money is to us, and what happens if and this wasn't a hurricane or a bomb, this was just something went wrong. Someone typed the wrong character. What's going to happen if, New York gets flooded and four or five major colo centers get, suddenly you go to get gas and your car doesn't work.
Right.
So there needs to be more attention paid to how we get around these outages. All of our livelihoods, all of our safety and wellness is tied to being able to get access to money like that. Not many people walk around with very much cash in their pocket anymore.
Well, and having worked as the security executive for a software company that powers like close to a third of the online banking transactions in the country, I can agree with what you have to say. On that note, I'd kind of like to take it somewhere that's a little bit near and dear to my heart, and that is another standard that's seeing more widespread adoption for security around the world and including in the United States. And I've had personal experience in implementing it. And that's ISO 27001, which recently underwent some naming. I can just make a quick statement for it. I've said before on the show that, that I and we have seen some terrific uptake with it and some very real benefit. I'm kind of curious about your opinions and experience with the ISO standard.
Oh, great. I've definitely got opinions there. And I am with you. I'm a big proponent of the standard. In fact, our audit is based on it. Our bank audit is based on it. I like the aspect of it, the holistic aspect of it and the international aspect of it. And we've actually been taken to task once or twice by saying, gee, guys, this is more than is needed, you know. And they say, you know, I don't think it can hurt to expose companies to what everything you should be doing, even if it's a little more than necessary. So we're big proponents of the ISO standard. I think it's probably the best thing to look towards as far as best practices go. We're big fans.
And yeah, Tony generally uses a 75 pages?
Yeah, it's about a 75-page checklist based directly off the ISO standards.
Yeah.
And of course, I know that, again, going back to my own experience, and forgive me for that, is that actually seeing a real, even a business benefit to adopting something like that in terms of savings, in terms of time it takes for audits, being, of course, audited directly by the FFIEC agencies like the FDIC and the OCC. But it's not just for banking. It really applies across the board. The beauty of it is that it's a true foundation. Think of it like building a house. You know, you have to have a good, strong, solid, and complete foundation that meets code and is generally accepted by, you know, industry before you start, you know, putting up your 2x4s and building the house on top of that foundation. And the ISO standard really provides that foundation.
Right. It also, I think, Greg gives the company that's having this done the options. You know, there's some of this that may not apply to a particular company or industry because of the way they're staffed or the way they operate. On the other hand, the exposure to this information, the exposure to the reality of their position can't hurt, and it can only help them from the standpoint of long-term planning.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one-size-fits-all. And again, as we go through it, a lot of people are amazed. I never thought of that. I never thought about my backup tapes and where they go. Right. I never thought about a lot of these things. And we see a lot of other bank audits and industry-specific audits that will deal with the regulation, but not the actual security. And then they're dealing with strictly getting the guys through an examination, which is great, but not necessarily exposing them to the full spectrum of what best practices are. And, you know, that's what we like is we're giving them the whole thing. And again, they may choose to do certain things, but at least they've heard it and they're aware now that this is important.
We both come from a background when we started this company. We had actually recently sold back in 2000, an ISP. And Tony was always on the cutting edge of security because of the fact that we were, you know, running T1s to buildings and you know, as soon as we went to DSL Tony was always right on the edge of this. We decided to, when we started our company, to try to provide security, and I always dealt with banks for years, so that's kind of where we focused. But the idea was we started out trying to help them better their security. And in reality, as the regulations continued to increase and the mandate came down that all banks were going to be held to the same security standard, the audits seemed to get more and more, or the exams seemed to be getting more and more bureaucratic relative to providing the appearance of security. Are your policies in place? Have you read the logs? Do you keep a log when you read the logs? Do you make all the employees sign this? Do you do training every year? And the concern is the documentation of not the quality of the documentation, but the actual, you know, provision of the documentation. And our audit tended to be much more technical in nature, where we examined that. We obviously, you know, given that we're going with the times, we've obviously continued to develop the audit to, you know, we look now at insurance policies and we look at all the policies and procedures and all the documentation that the bank has to make sure that they are, you know, contemporary in providing the appearance of security that's going to be required with the audit, with the exam. But the technical aspect of this, using the ISO standards, to me, is the best thing a bank can do is to look at this and, you know, act accordingly relative to the findings in that 75-page questionnaire.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of companies don't think realize there's more than one way to address this thing. It's not necessarily by a firewall. You can insure against something. You can outsource it. You can decide not to do that thing. So there's more than one way to skin the cat, as it were, in terms of gaining security or, and again, it's a business decision, and we try to give them the full spectrum of those. Versus just, well, buy the firewall or don't buy the firewall.
It seems that one of the points here is that if you don't store critical data, then you're not obligated to protect that critical data.
Right.
Right.
Get rid of your credit card numbers and you don't have that problem.
One of the things to be careful about, though, is it's not just storing. It's handling, moving, transporting,
right.
or interacting
Back
with.
Up.
So I think it's important to point that out.
Yes.
27001 sounds like this sort of very broad spectrum InfoSec rule set. How does one get started on this? Do you go to the book? Do you start with an audit? What's the sort of
good books? There's you can go to the websites. I think the organization, you can download it. A full standard is quite lengthy, but it's out there and available for you to look at. You probably want to work with a company that actually does these kind of things, and there's several different levels. You can just get audited based on an ISO 27001, or you can actually go for certification, which is a much more complex process, and you have to, it takes several years usually to go through, get an organization certified, where they actually can put that seal on there, just like you've seen other industrial concerns have their ISOs.
Right.
Well, IT security has ours, and you can actually get that little seal, but that's a much more complicated process.
That's the process that I have experience with and the certification that I've gone through. So certainly, Richard, people could contact me if they have specific questions about that.
Yeah, you bet. Send it to us and we'll help it move along. And Tony and Glenn, thanks for your insight into this. It sounds, the challenge I have listening and thinking about this is it all sounds very vague. But then I guess, the correct answer to all of these things is it depends. What have you got and how are you handling it? So just trying to get the listener started in the right direction, I guess, is the most we can
do. Well, I mean, if you think about it, just kind of to wrap it up, if you think about it, depending on the size of the organization, the amount of data that they need to secure, the competence of the people within the organization, the availability of a competent third party to come in and advise them, you're right. The response to this is all over the board. The important thing is that the organization understands that they really, it's a good business practice to keep the data as secure as possible.
We try to help our clients make good business decisions.
Right.
And if you take it down to that, it's very easy for executives and companies to understand. If you're spouting bits and bytes, they often go off into space. But then when you start talking about a business impact and business decisions, that's their language, and that's what we try to do.
And scary words like liability.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
that generally gets the attention of upper management.
Risk and liability.
You know, you talk about megabits, they really don't care. But you know, when you talk about
megabucks,
liability. Yeah.
Megabucks, they start working.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the big sources of frustration for everybody involved, and I'm thinking, when I think everybody, I sort of think users, IT departments, if we're talking about the IT infrastructure and InfoSec teams, hardly ever does everybody seem to be happy. And I know in your Redheaded Stepchild blog post, you said that's okay. We don't really want it to be that way, or it doesn't need to be that way. Like, there are some cases where usability can be improved and security can be improved, and maybe that would be a good topic for another show, or it also might be
love
something maybe
about.
You can give one example as we close.
I'd love to talk about something like that, and this, things like Vista, where they've improved the security, but it's really impacted usability, and it is a spectrum. You have to figure out the right place you want to land on that spectrum. Obviously, the most secure system in the world is a computer that's turned off in a room with no doors or no windows.
Right.
But you can't do that. So you have to find that spectrum and what makes sense from a business standpoint.
All right, Tony, Glenn, been a pleasure talking to you. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.